I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Certainly the most exciting news in our Aston Martin's Formula One history, and I think probably the most exciting news in Formula One in general. Adrian Newey will be joining us as, first and foremost, a shareholder and our technical managing partner of our Formula One team.
I felt as if I needed a new challenge, and I felt, you know, I've been lucky enough to have achieved what I aspired to from the age of 10 or 12, which was simply to be a designer. I don't think you knew the word engineer in motor racing, but you have to be honest with yourself, you have to keep yourself fresh, and so I felt I needed a new challenge. Very flattered to have a lot of approaches from various teams, but really Lawrence's passion and commitment and enthusiasm is very endearing, it's very persuasive. It became a very natural choice.
Adrian arguably is the greatest in the world at what he does. There's nobody who's come close to winning as many world championships. He's a gentleman, he's a winner, he's a competitor, and he has the passion and desire to win, as do I. Adrian is key, and the biggest part of the puzzle, certainly from a technical point of view, from a leadership point of view. Know that he will be leading the team, and I think that will have a trickle-down effect throughout the whole organization.
It's official. Aston Martin have announced the signing of Adrian Newey on a multi-year deal. Regarded by many as the greatest F1 designer of all time, Newey has contributed to a combined 25 drivers and constructors titles with Williams, McLaren and Red Bull over more than three decades in the sport. Earlier this year, Adrian confirmed he'd be leaving his role as Red Bull's chief technical officer to seek a new challenge, and we now know what that challenge is. Welcome everyone to F1 Nation. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me is Aston Martin ambassador Pedro de la Rosa. We'll be previewing the Azerbaijan Grand Prix later in the show, but there's only one place for us to start, and that is with Adrian Newey, who was unveiled by Aston Martin at a press conference with team owner Lawrence Stroll. Well, Pedro, great to have you on the show. What was your reaction when you found out that Newey would be joining Aston Martin?
Well, hello, Tom. Hello to everyone. Obviously, it's fantastic news for all of us. In the Aston Martin Formula One team, it is something that we were all hoping and waiting and dreaming of, but it's just now a reality. It is fantastic news, and it just highlights how appealing our project was, how exciting it was for Adrian to join, and what an exciting future we have all in front. You know, I can't wait for him to get started and work again with him. You know, I haven't worked a lot with Adrian, but back in my early years in Formula One, we worked together at McLaren, so I think we know each other quite well. It's a game changer, and it's obviously a very important point in our history at Aston Martin Formula One team. I think it just gives so much credit to our team, you know, because at the end of the day, every team in the grid wanted Adrian to join, but he decided for Aston Martin Formula One.
Why do you think he joined Aston Martin and not Ferrari in particular? Because, you know, Fred Vasseur, team principal there, was very keen to have him.
I think Adrian, we know Adrian, he's a winner. You know, he really wants to win badly everything he does. In a way, he has like a racing driver mentality. And I think that, honestly, the fact that he has decided for our team is because he saw that the ingredients to win were there. The resources, the people, the team, the existing people, they were all in place, you know, and otherwise he wouldn't have joined.
And what does he bring? What is the magic of Adrian Newey? I mean, talk us through your time at McLaren with him. What was it like to work with him?
I've driven the fastest car, F1 car I've ever driven. It was the MP420. It's a McLaren, and it was 2005, the last V10 engine, which, by the way, I still hold the record in Bahrain. So I mean,
yes,
it was
lap
for
record.
Yes. That lap record was set with Adrian's car, and basically it was set not because I'm you know, I was flying. It was just because the car was unbelievably fast, and you know, so basically what really impressed me about Adrian when I started at McLaren was how involved he became on the race team, how much he asked the driver about the car balance, the car handling. So he got very deep into the questions, into the debriefs with the drivers. And this is something that for a technical director, when I was at McLaren, it was surprising, because normally technical directors don't get involved in the qualifying or a testing debrief with the drivers. But he was asked, I was the third driver back in 2005, the third driver. So we had the chance of running three cars on a Friday. And I remember Australia, first race of the season, we were there with the MP420. It was I did the FP1 session. So after that, he was asking me all type of questions about, you know, going into turn one, steering angle, how much lock I was applying into turn one, and what was limiting me from going faster in that corner. So he was very much into the details of the car handling and balance, but he was always asking what was limiting you to go faster. Then he would go into the wind tunnel, he would look for solutions, and the next race he would say, remember what you told me in turn one in Australia? We've brought this new front wing so that you can go faster. And it was just that level of taking the comments of the driver, not only relying on data and applying what he could see on the data. He was relying on data, listening to the driver, and immediately looking for solutions and bringing solutions, because at the end of the day, we all understand the problems. But the difference between us is who can deliver solutions and who can't. And Adrian is the kind of guy that listens. He's more a listener than a talker, if you know what I mean. But he always brings solutions. And the solutions sometimes work, sometimes they don't. They normally tend to work more than with other people. He's a fantastic, fantastic asset, man. I'm so happy that he joins, that he has picked up Aston Martin Formula One. It just gives so much credit to all of us, you know, and having him is a guarantee that we have the best with us.
One of the things people at Red Bull have told me is that the young engineers love working with Adrian. So it's not only the solutions he brings to performance, it's the impact he has on the people around him. And I can only imagine that as he was announced in that press conference today, I can only imagine the roar of approval, if you like, that went all around the factory in Silverstone, because everyone is going to benefit, not just car performance.
Yeah, I think that in life, all of us, I mean, what we really want to do is more importantly than succeed in what we do is really to learn every day a new thing. And there are very few people that can inspire you on a daily basis. They can teach you things every day and you can learn from and grow from. And Adrian is that kind of person, you know? So that's why I still remember these details of when I started working with Adrian. There's so many things I learned from him that I cannot actually explain, because I think that these things are just the secret of Formula One. And I think that's exactly what you mean, is the fact that Adrian inspired me, but his power is really inspiring the new generation of engineers that are in our factory right now, you know, and bring up good talent, because people like Adrian are very good at detecting talent, you know, detecting people, engineers that are of his level. But it will be a pleasure to see him grow in our team and let the young talent grow as well in our team. It's just a fantastic moment in history of a team, really, to be able to witness how all this new generation will benefit from Adrian.
Now, he's not joining the team until the early part of 2025. How immediate is his influence going to be felt? I mean, can he influence the 2025 car, or is this all about 2026?
Well, first of all, I must say I'm talking about 25, obviously, you know, when he joins. However, I just think that we have to look long term in this business. You cannot really think about 2025 or the immediate change that Adrian will have. I think we have to be very respectful of the people that we already have, the existing team. Without them, Adrian wouldn't have joined. That's the reality, you know. So we have to be very mindful that we have the best already, and that Adrian will just strengthen our group. Let's wait for when he joins in 25, and then we will grow together. We would love to have him right now, but things don't happen short term in Formula One. If Adrian is coming in 25, we will have to look at 26 influence, really, you know, to feel a difference on his arrival. But let's take a step at a time and just enjoy the moment.
We will. I'm sure everyone is enjoying the moment today. But I had a really interesting chat with Mark Webber about Adrian Newey when we were sort of speculating about where he might end up. And Mark was saying that a team has to be ready for someone like Adrian. When he first went to Red Bull in 2006, the team wasn't ready for him. And, you know what that team was like from your days at Jaguar. And it took 3 years for them to start winning back then because, you know, Adrian had to start building up the facilities at the factory. He had to start building up the design department. And only when those things were in place could you really feel the full impact of Adrian Newey. At what stage is Aston Martin at Silverstone now? Is everything in place ready for him?
Well, that's a very, very good point you bring up. And I think that the reality is we are not ready at the moment now, today, for Adrian, because our wind tunnel is still not working. But we are in that phase that in a few months, we will have our wind tunnel. We will have our new simulator working as well. So I think the honest answer is we are not ready yet, but we will be by 2025 when he joins. So that is the reality. And also, I think that, you know, he knows better than all of us that Aston Martin will be ready when he arrives. And that's why he's joining. I think this is the most important point of this announcement, is that Adrian Newey is here. He will come here in 25. This is fantastic. But he would not join if he wouldn't have the assurance or the confidence that Aston Martin is ready for him. We are ready for him when he joins, not right now, but in the next few months, yes.
Now, sister podcast to this one, F1 Beyond the Grid. Adrian was one of my guests last year. And one of the things he said is that there were two drivers on the current grid that he wished he'd worked with. One was Lewis Hamilton. The other was Fernando Alonso. And of course, the meeting of those two is now going to happen at Aston Martin. Do you think Fernando and Adrian are going to get on? Do you see that being a very powerful combination?
Oh, fantastic combination of two true racers. Both have exactly the same mentality. They have a winning mentality. They're always thinking about how can this car go any faster 24 hours a day. They are passionate. They have the ingredients that you need to win in this business. So I have no doubt that they will get on fantastically well. And I expect very long briefings and debriefings in the factory and also at the track with Adrian and Fernando together. Yes, I think they will work very well together, and together with Lance as well, because Lance is also another driver that goes into very much details about how the car balance handles. He brings so much, Lance, to the engineers just to set up the car as well. So I think we will be a strong team. You know, I mean, it's not. It's very important to have the best, but it's very important that the best work well together, because that makes a special combination.
And after 3 decades in the sport, and what is it, you know, the 25 world titles that he's won, that hasn't dimmed at all. And that is what is so extraordinary about the man, that the competitive spirit. It's like it was back in 1980 when he was with Fittipaldi.
Well, I think that a bit is like with Fernando, you know, when you are so long in the sport, if you keep going, it's because you are hungry still. And some people with age do get less hungry. So at one point they decide maybe it's time to quit. Maybe I have other interest in my life. But there's some people, and Fernando is one, and I'm pretty sure Adrian is as well, but I'm not too sure yet. As they grow older, they become even worse losers. They cannot accept being defeated. And this is the fuel that is running through their veins. And that's what is fantastic from the outside to watch. I personally can say I have that. I think age has made me more rational, reflexive, you know, a bit more, you know, take it easy. Sometimes you have to lose, you have to accept it. But these guys, they are just made of a different breed. You know, they are just they don't accept losing, basically. And that's what really I admire from them.
Well, Pedro, one final thought is, let's talk power units, because, of course, Adrian Newey joining Aston Martin comes at a time when Honda are joining Aston Martin for 2026. I'm sure that would have been a factor in the decision as well.
I think it's great news as well that he has a very good relationship with Honda. He knows them very well. And it's just, in a way, it's just a continuation of his work with this group of engineers. Our engineers are already working very, very closely with Honda for 26. So I think it's all aligning very well, to be honest.
And so, a world title, Fernando Alonso, Adrian Newey, Aston Martin 2026.
Hey, man, we will see. You know, I think we just have to make sure we have all the ingredients in place. Lorenz is putting a fantastic team together. Lorenz always says that to win, you need 3 things. You need the people, you need the processes, and the tools. He always says this. I think that he's slowly, you know, gradually, he's been giving all of us the 3 most important tools. I think the people now, it's beyond question. We have a super strong team in all departments. The processes are in place. We still lack the tools, which are really being delivered in the next few months, you know, but it's Formula One. It's not like signing the only people, you know, like a football team, and you already have a Champions League winning team. You have to give your team, your people, the tools. And this is the process we are in. But as I've said, I mean, it is an exciting project. Will it be enough to win or not? I mean, only God knows. I'm not really worried about that right now with the lineup of people and tools and processes we have in place.
Well, it's a huge story for Formula One. It's a huge story for Aston Martin. And for more reaction and analysis, go to F1.com, the F1 app, and follow F1 on Instagram, X, and TikTok.
I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com. Right, Pedro, let's now focus on the Azerbaijan Grand Prix coming up this weekend. Lando Norris and McLaren closed the gap to Max Verstappen and Red Bull in both world championships at Monza last time out. But ahead of Baku, there are still more questions than answers for McLaren after Norris and his teammate Oscar Piastri were allowed to race each other under the so-called papaya rules. And Lando's now 62 points behind Max with 8 races left, including 3 sprints. That adds up to 272 points. What was your take on Monza and the papaya rules? Are we at a point where McLaren need to throw all their weight behind Lando Norris?
Okay, well, I mean, I think that the first thing we have to explain is that all Formula One teams have their rules of engagement, which means they are the rules that mark a bit how drivers should interact between them and the team, you know. So basically, if you're in a race and there's a, you know, you, how do you fight against your teammate, who has priority in a pit stop, if are you allowed to undercut if you are behind the guy in front, how hard can you fight your teammate. So basically it's just like some rules that are set before the season starts so that they are clear and everyone has the cards facing up, you know. So we all know what we're standing. So if at one point you are just a few races to go and you're in front in the championship, you know that your teammate will have to help you because that's what the rules of engagement say. But sometimes the rules of engagement don't say that any of the two drivers have a priority in any conditions or at the end of the season. However, so it's very difficult for us from the outside to judge what the papaya rules say or how what they should say. All we have to understand is that there are always rules and it's up to the teams to set them for the drivers. And the drivers have to comply with those rules because at the end of the day, we work for the teams. And the most important thing is always the team, not the drivers, you know. And the Constructors' Championship is the championship as well that give the money. The Drivers' Championship give the credibility or give the prestige. But it's sometimes you have to think in a wider view, you know, you are working for 800 people in your factory and all your fans. It's not only for yourself. And those 800 people plus that are working for your car and your teammates are represent 800 families. So it's an added pressure for the driver that you're not only thinking about your driver world championship. I mean, you have to think about a lot more than that. That's why I say that we shouldn't judge what McLaren has done or will do, because it's up to their rules of engagement, really. I have a view of the team is always first, and you have to comply with the rules, whatever they say, even if you don't like them. And I think they're doing it quite well. It's just that suddenly they have a winning car, and then everyone is thinking, well, one of them should be the picked one, you know, should be the number one. But is that what the rules of engagement say? I think this is what we don't know.
Fine, but to beat Max Verstappen, to close down that 62-point gap, do they need to favour Lando Norris? Can he do it on his own?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know, really. Sometimes you have to think in a different way, really. You have to think about what is the best for the team for the mid-long term. It's not what is best for your next few races just to win the championship, you know? So I think that's where all the teams come from.
Well, Pedro, I've got to interrupt you there. Do you think Red Bull have that approach? Do you think if Sergio Perez is leading in Baku this weekend with Max Verstappen second, do you think Perez will be allowed to win that race?
Well, it's a very different scenario, because I think that in this team, in Red Bull, there is a clear number one, you know? I mean, there's always, it is clearly on the point standing massively and on a race-by-race basis, you know? So I think that there is no question of what the rules of engagement should say there. It's more on the teams where you have two competitors, two drivers that are really, they are very competitive and there's not a lot in them. That's when the problems come. And this is where McLaren is at the moment. But it's a fantastic issue to have, no? To have two guys that are fighting, that they're really close in the championship. They're very close in speed, in consistency. And then you have the issue of who should win. But at the end of the day, you have to let them race. So one thing, Tom, that is, you know, when I used to race for Jaguar Racing with Eddie Irvine, we didn't have the best of the relationships. Some of it was because of Eddie. Some of it was because of myself as well. I was not always the best teammate to Eddie, because I didn't feel he was treating me the best way either. So at one race in Hungary, I was in qualifying. I remember the team on the radio said that Eddie is coming. Yeah. So I looked on I was on a slow lap. Eddie was on a quali lap. I looked on the mirrors through turn 10. I could see Eddie coming on a flyer. And I remember coming out of turn 10 and I just left him 2.5 meters wide with on the track, just so that he could overtake me. But he could overtake me just thinking, I hope Pedro has seen me, you know? You're giving the space, but you're not giving 1 inch more than what you should. He didn't lose any time, but I didn't let him enough space. That's the reality. And when we came back to the garage, Eddie was furious at me and he was just, Pedro again, he just destroyed my lap, which was not true. But Niki Lauda came and said, okay, guys, don't fight. Let's discuss this. So he said, Pedro, what did you do this time? And I said, I haven't done anything this time. I mean, we were just in front of Eddie. I mean, Niki was very good at that. He was always very straightforward and we were always discussing things internally and in a very, very open way. And he said to me, I said, look, Niki, I saw he was coming, the team informed me, and I left him the exact width he needed not to lose time, but I didn't give him 1 inch more. And Niki said to me in front of Eddie, and I remember this very well, and it just, you know, it's a very good learning process. He says, Pedro, to your teammate, you always have to treat him in a better way than any other. So it's not enough that you gave him the enough space or that you treated him the same as any other driver. You have to treat him a bit better. And I think this is... This
Do you think he's right? Do you think he's right?
Well, I mean, I think it's right. I think he was right. But the other thing is, did I want to do that? No. You know, I mean, did Eddie want to do that? No. But it was like an inflection point in the season where I just understood what he meant. And he was right. We cannot think only about ourselves as being racing drivers. We have to think on the overall picture. And we have to understand that the underlying factor in the rules of engagement is that we must treat our teammate in a better way, better manner than we would treat any other driver. And I think this is the common denominator of motorsport. And whenever you achieve that level of understanding, it means that you are arrived to a level of matureness that is acceptable and just gives you the credibility, really. So going back to the rules of engagement, I think this is what any driver has to do.
Right. And do you think McLaren will change those rules of engagement going forward to favour Lando Norris?
I don't know, Tom. I really don't know. I mean, for me, they're not doing anything wrong. You know, that's what I'm coming from. The only thing they can tell the drivers really is to be a bit more protective of each other during the race starts. don't try to overtake in such a aggressive manner that you endanger your teammate of being overtaken by, let's say, Leclerc, because what happened in Monza between Piastri and Norris, I think it was a fantastic move from Piastri, don't get me wrong, very racy, but I would say he went too far because Lando was compromised by Leclerc. Had he not been compromised, it was a very legitimate and fantastic maneuver from a racing perspective. But that's the point that the drivers and the teams have to work on, is what is treating your teammate better than any other driver. You know, that's why I gave you the example of what Nicky said, which is very, very important.
What does it do to the psyche of a driver? If Piastri gets asked, you know, to give up a race win for Lando, how hard is that to swallow for someone like Piastri? You know, an up-and-coming driver, highly rated. Zak Brown, CEO of McLaren, has said, you know, we have two number ones. And then suddenly you're asking one of your number ones to behave like a number two. And actually, the irony of Piastri being managed by Mark Webber, who, you know, famously came out with that quote, not bad for a number two driver when he won at Silverstone. I don't know, would it destroy him mentally, or do you think Piastri could deal with that?
I think that there is absolutely no problem when you are asked to favor another driver from a mentality point of view, or, you know, I mean, it's fine. I mean, if the other guy has more chances towards the very end of the season and you have to let him win or give him some more space, or if you need to protect him at one point strategically, that's fine. As long as you know you can do the same job or better than your teammate. The problem with number two drivers is when you are a number two because you cannot match the speed of the number one. Then it's when you have issues, mental issues of, you know, you start questioning yourself, if you have the level to win a world championship, if you should be driving the car you are, then everything becomes very complicated. But in this particular scenario where you have Oscar and Lando both at a very similar levels, I think it's just a matter of being disciplined and taking into consideration execute the rules of engagement.
I wonder how all this is going to affect the relationship between Norris and Piastri. I'm reminded of the post-race press conference in Monza. Charles Leclerc, understandably, wouldn't stop talking in the TV pen. And the two McLaren drivers, second and third, arrived in the press conference room with me early. And we were just waiting for Charles. And we were waiting. I mean, Lando was there for 20 minutes. Oscar was there probably for 10 minutes. And when they were together in the room, I don't remember them saying a single word to each other. I'm not saying that it was awkward, because they weren't sat right next to each other. There was a sort of gap in the middle between them where Leclerc was going to come and sit. But they did just sit there and not communicate at all. And I'm just wondering how McLaren deal with this, I think, is really important for the relationship between those two.
Honestly, Tom, there's 8 races to go. It is like very early to talk about giving priority to one of the both drivers, given the fact that they are so evenly matched. This is my feeling, you know, and as long as they respect themselves, you know, between them, and as long as they treat them in a better way as they would any other driver, I think it's fine. Team orders 8 races to go, or 9 races in Monza. It's, it's just a bit too much, I would say, when you have two drivers in the team that they can still win the championship mathematically. And it's a bit unfair for one of them, you know, because why would you give up on your dream? I'm pretty sure that if you ask Oscar if he can become world champion this year, he won't say yes, but he really thinks so, and he's dreaming of it, you know, and he thinks, if I do everything right, I can still make it, you know. If it is still very early in the season, really, to talk about team orders in that way of just letting your teammate win races that easily.
Now, McLaren have been here before. Okay, it was different management, different times. But I feel history is slightly repeating itself when we think back to 2007. It was the Ron Dennis era, but you had Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton. Lewis in his first season of Formula One. And had they prioritised one of those two drivers early in the season, there is no doubt in my mind that a McLaren driver would have won that world championship, as it was Kimi Raikkonen won for Ferrari. And you were there.
Yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, I would say more unfortunately that year, because we lost it for 1 point on the last race, Interlagos. It's still the most painful day in my career, really, is when I look back. Sometimes I even wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. just like thinking, you know, about that race or just how on earth we could lose that one. But Tom, if I ask myself, did the team do the right thing? We did the right thing because we let them race until the end. And because of that, we lost the world championship. That's true. I mean, clearly we lost it. Had we given team orders a few races to go, it would have become very easy to actually win the world championship. But would it have been correct for any of them, for Luis or for Fernando? It wouldn't have. So I think that we did the right thing as a team. We lost the championship, but that's always the issue or always the risk when you have two such a great drivers in the team. And you are always, they're taking points out of each other gradually and progressively during the season. So,
do you think Fernando Alonso agrees with you that the team did the right thing?
Well, I'm pretty sure neither Luis or Fernando agree with me, you know, but that's when the team needs to stand. And I'm taking the view of the team really here, because I was not driving the car, but obviously either of them would say, Pedro, you are wrong. You know, they at this particular race, they should have favored me. It's true that in 2007, there was a bit of a controversy on the strategy, because you remember that we had you qualified with the fuel you would be racing. So we were burning fuel during qualifying, and then that we knew exactly what stop lap each of our drivers would have. So there was a clear preference to actually qualify in front and stop one lap earlier, you know, something like that, I think, from what I remember. They were giving like one race, you will have priority in qualifying, the next race, the other driver. So the team was really trying to be very, very balanced with both of them. And eventually we lost the championship. Had we done differently, we would have been world champions, at least one of our drivers. But I wouldn't have felt right for the other one, because one would have won the championship, the other one would have lost it.
So who would you rather be? Lando Norris, 62 points back, but in the form car, or Max Verstappen in a car that appears to be struggling, but with that points advantage?
Ah, good question. I mean, I think that here we are just thinking that everything is going to become static and won't change from now on until the end of the season. And we are underrating a bit what Red Bull reaction can be in the next few races. We think that, okay, McLaren has the best car, Red Bull are struggling. Yes, this is now. But in the next few races, you don't know what Red Bull can come up with. They haven't been dominating the sport just because they were lucky, you know. I mean, they know what they're doing. I'm pretty sure when you listen to Christian Horner saying that they have issues, they have put more downforce in the car, clearly they can see on the data, but then they are disconnecting the front from the rear, which means that the car is unstable on entry and then has more understeer on the mid corner, blah, blah, blah. When he's giving us all this information, which is fantastic to listen and read, it's because they are weeks ahead from what Christian is saying to all of us. They are fixing the problems in the winter. So let's be patient. I think that Red Bull will react. They are very powerful as a team. I personally, if you ask me again, I would prefer to be Max Verstappen, you know, always in the lead and being able and capable of looking on the mirrors and covering what's coming.
I've always been the type to go all in. When I get into something, whether it's fitness, food, or just following every twist and turn of the season, I want to explore every angle. That's why Prime is such a game changer. It's not just fast delivery, though getting a new cookbook or resistance bands the next day definitely helps. It's also the deep dives on Prime Video, the playlists that match my mood on Amazon Music, and the way all of it comes together to keep me going. What I've learnt is this: Prime isn't just a service, it's a hub, a place where my interests, old and new, can live and grow. From race day rituals to everyday obsessions, Prime helps me get more out of whatever I'm into, and even shows me what's next. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more out of whatever you're into. amazon.com/prime.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Let's not forget that the Azerbaijan Grand Prix was a race that Red Bull finished 1-2 at last year. Charles Leclerc was on pole position last year in Baku, so it's a track that he goes very well at. Ferrari go very well at. Funnily enough, the team that hasn't got a great record in Baku is McLaren. Okay, it was early in the season last year. It was before the Austria upgrade, but I think Norris finished 9th in the race last year. McLaren was pretty off the pace. I mean, Pedro, talk us around a lap of Baku. What do you need from your car?
Wow. I mean, you're talking about McLaren, but last year, I mean, I think that the McLaren of this year is a much more complete car in the sense that we've been in Zandvoort, highest downforce, you know, you're bringing your biggest rear and front wings really to build up the downforce. You don't have long straights. So, and they dominate it. We go to Monza, you bring the lowest downforce, little wings. You need a high efficiency, and they are also on pole position, 1-2, and they should have won the race. So, you know, I mean, I think the McLaren will be very competitive again in Baku, and never mind what happened last season there. The lap of Baku, I've never raced there. So I've only been in the simulator back a long time ago. And it's just a very difficult track because you are running with low downforce, quite medium low downforce setup, but the actual corners, all the corners are really slow, medium speed, which require a lot of heavy braking, a lot of 90 degree corners, as you say, but also always with a common denominator, which is a lot of walls. You know, you lose a bit the entry stability, you go in a bit wide and you will hit the wall. So you have to be very precise on the braking phase. You have to be very precise and very committed on how you throw the car into the apex. A lot of the lap time in Baku comes from entry stability with the brakes. And this is something that the good cars shine, especially. What makes a good car is not the traction. I mean, traction is obviously important, but what makes a good car is the braking and entry stability, the trail braking into the apex. That how much you can attack the apexes of the corner. That's where the lap time comes from. And Baku is a typical place where, you know, you have to bring the speed into the apex with the brakes, trailing the brakes, and positioning the car with the brakes as well. So you need a lot of rotation in these 90 degree corners, because if you go in very fast into the apex, but the front end is pointing to the grandstand, if you are not pointing the front end in the right direction on exit, you will get a very slow exit of the corner, very bad, poor traction. So you need to have a very complete car with a very good entry stability and strong front mid corner.
Okay, so McLaren are likely to be strong. Ferrari, the upgrade they brought to Monza, the new floor there, that seems to be working. What's your assessment of Mercedes?
They should be very quick because they were very quick in Spa with a type of, medium-low downforce setup. So they could be very, very quick in Baku. One thing about Monza is that everyone thinks that Monza, we come from Monza now, and it's just, it's only chicanes, it's low-speed corners, low downforce. But if you look at the Monza layout nowadays, and especially with all the asphalt changes, the curbs, I mean, you have the first chicane, which is second gear. Then you have the second chicane, and it is third gear. But after that, Lesmo 1, Lesmo 2, Ascari and Parabolica, they are fifth gear corners. So it's not a low-speed track. It is more than that. It's a lot more than that. I think it's one of the... There's only two slow-speed corners. The rest is high-speed. You know, fifth gear corner is a high-speed corner. So, it is very demanding. Monza is a bit of a... I would say it's a bit of a strange one. Let's wait for Baku. It's more of a more demanding track for the... You know, you have... low speed corners, medium speed, not a lot of high speed. So it's a very different track.
Well, and then there's the 2.2 kilometer pit straight in Baku. And do you remember back in, I think it was 2016, Valtteri Bottas in second practice, I think it was, set a top speed of 378 kilometers an hour. 378. What's that? That's 235 miles an hour or something. I mean, insane top speeds. But look, what about Aston then? I mean, Alonso finished fourth in Baku last year. But it's been a tough batch of races for you guys. And Alonso wasn't mincing his words after the race in Monza, you know, saying, I think he used the words, it's not good enough.
No, it's a challenging phase of the season, that's for sure. But I think there's a lot of things, the interesting things that are happening in the factory right now. We understand our issues. We understand where we have to improve the car. That's where the team is working flat out in our campus, you know. So we just have to be a bit more patient. Baku will be tough again, for sure. But we haven't given up on 24. There are updates coming. They will be delivered at the track when they're ready. We cannot put a date in place. But be a bit more patient. That's what the thing I would ask the people. You know, we're working flat out, and we know what we should do now.
Well, as Alonso said in the press conference in Hungary, he said, "What I want from the rest of 2024 is to sort out the issues we have, so that we can have a clean 2025."
Yes, I think this is a very important message, is that we have the same regulations in 25. So all the learnings from 24 will be carried over for 25. And that's why we are working flat out still on the 24 car. I think that if you look back, we are now in a position, a much better position, to solve our issues in the next few months, next few races. Although the people don't see any differences because the car is the same for the past few races, we really know what the problem is and how to solve it now, you know? So I think we need a few more races. We just have to hang in there. It won't be easy for the drivers, for sure, because the updates won't be ready yet.
Now, while we're talking Aston, the word on the street in the pubs of Silverstone is that there was an absolute legend driving the two-year-old car a couple of weeks ago, and that this legend has still got it. I think you know who I'm talking about. Pedro, how were your laps in the two-year-old car?
The legend. I mean, in the pubs. I mean, yeah, it was they're still talking about it, apparently, you know, 1 week later. So, and still my neck is sore. The neck of the legend is still sore, but it was a fantastic experience, really. It was a bonus. I was not expecting to jump into the car. Bear in mind, I haven't driven a Formula One car for 10 years. So 10 years after, I jump in an Aston Martin 2022 car. So it's the first ground effect car. So, wow, that was something interesting in my life, because after 10 years, you obviously have to reset yourself, the speed of a Formula One. But especially for me, driving a ground effect car, it was impressive. Impressive because the grip level you produce at high speed is mind-blowing. I mean, turn one, flat in eighth gear, you know, it took me, I mean, I only did a few laps, so I knew I didn't have many laps to just do it flat, and I didn't want to come into the pit saying I didn't do it flat. So I had to do it flat. basically, although my neck was saying back off, the speed differential, high speed to low speed, is also incredible, because in at low speed corners, you have very little grip. You just really have to fight the car. You have nearly 200 kilos more than what I used to have. But high speed is unreal. The Cops, for example, I didn't manage to do it flat, but it's a corner that you should be flat. Eighth gear, again, impressive. And then Becketts, it's not a complex. It's only one corner now. You go in flat until the last corner. You just brake very gently. You downshift to sixth and you go out. So it's not like there's four corners. It's only one. It's the last corner that is only the corner, because all the rest is just flat. And then Stowe, for me, was the most difficult one. You know, after the hangar straight, you open DRS, you arrive there 315, 320. And the problem there is that you see the grandstand, you see a corner, but when you are in the car, you have so much grip that you just brake very gently. You don't hit the brakes. In my era, you just arrive there, you hit the brakes, downshift to you know, from eighth to fifth, and then put the power again. Now it's just, you have to brake very gently on the, just as you go into the corner, you just have a different grip level. It was the corner I most struggled with. But anyway, it was fantastic. Great experience. Thanks to Aston Martin for the opportunity. It's only a one-off, though. Yeah, look, it's not the return.
I don't believe you. Quick. It's not too late. Pedro, so the high-speed performance was mind-blowing. One of the goals of the FIA is to create more corners around the lap, stop everything being flat out. That is one of the goals of those new cars. Lap times will be slower, but the lap might well be more challenging.
It will be 100%, and the driver will be very busy there with all the buttons and you know, moving all the aero bits. But but that's something that will happen in 26. We still have 24 on, and we have a very interesting 25, especially for us, you know, especially at Aston Martin Formula One. Let's see. I mean, it's just exciting times, Tom. Exciting times.
Yeah, well, and particularly for Oliver Bearman. Ollie Bearman, F2 driver. People listening may well remember him from the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix earlier in the year when he was parachuted in to replace the ill Carlos Sainz. He is going to be driving the Haas this weekend, replacing Kevin Magnussen, who has been banned for one race for accumulating 12 points on his license over the last 12 months. What an opportunity to go up against Nico Hülkenberg and have a whole weekend this time from FP1 onwards.
Yeah, it's great. Great opportunity as well to build on next year, you know, for Ollie. I was watching the other day the onboard camera of Ollie in Jeddah driving the Ferrari, and it's something that it's amazing when you watch his head, you know, during the race, his head on the first sector, which is mostly high speed, he lost his neck strength there. And what a great job he did, basically not being able to hold his head, you know, because it was hitting the headrest side to side, like if there was no one in there. And so all I'm saying is that for Ollie Bearman, which he was coming from the Formula 2, you know, I mean, the experience and race as well, he was racing there with the F2. So imagine how demanding a Formula 1 car is in the high speed, going back to your other question. And I'm sure that, in Baku, it's not so demanding on the neck. So I'm pretty sure he will be in better shape there. And but it's great. It's great to see youngsters coming through. I wish also that Formula 1 would look into IndyCar, because I think that there are very good drivers coming out there. And, you know, you have Alex Palou, for example, who has won two championships and he's fighting for a third one. So it's good to see youngsters, but I think that we should also look a bit elsewhere, you know, not only Formula 3 and Formula 2, which is fantastic, obviously.
Well, only two seats still up for grabs for 2025, the second V-Carb alongside Yuki Tsunoda, and, of course, what's going on at Sauber, who is going to partner Nico Hülkenberg there. Mattia Binotto held a press conference in Monza in which he said he really wants to sort out that second seat very soon. Does he go for experience? Does he have Valtteri Bottas, the incumbent? Or does he go for youth and get their third driver, Teo Pourchaire, who was on this show last week? Or do they go for Bortoleto, the Brazilian driver who's now leading the championship in Formula 2. Would you go for youth or experience, just out of interest, alongside Hülkenberg?
I'm of the opinion that you have to give youth an opportunity, because they are the future. They are extremely well prepared. I always say that the new generations will always be better than ours. Our generation, just mainly because they have started from an earlier age and they have simulators to make them grow up, and they can be testing, they can be training 24 hours a day. But anyway, I mean, it's up to each team to decide on the driver lineup. If I were a team principal, I would definitely go for young. You know, if you're in that position, it's always good to have a very young driver with an experienced one, like a good combination. And especially in a team like Audi, you know, which is growing up, it would be a fantastic combination. But anyway, you know, everyone has their own ways of assessing what their needs. I think as well, Tom, that nowadays we have simulators, which if you have any doubts about drivers and how they can work with the team, how accurate is their feedback, you can put them in the simulator, spend a few days with them and assess them properly. It's not like you have to take a decision, a blind decision of I'm going for this driver. But well, I mean, so you can really, you have your limits as to how many test days you have. We're very limited on that. But then you have the simulator, which you can assess drivers, young drivers, very well. And they give you an indication of how sensitive. You can do blind test to a driver just in the simulator, see how much he can feel from the changes, you know. And so there's a lot of things that you can do nowadays.
Well, amigo, it's been brilliant to have you back on the show. Thank you for your time. Can we just end in the traditional way, Pedro, and get your podium prediction for Baku?
Wow. Wow, wow. I would go for a Lando, Max, Oscar.
Interesting. I'm going to put Charles Leclerc in there. I think this is a Leclerc race. I think he's on a roll. I think he's upping his game. I thought Davide Valsecchi on the show last week made a very good point. He thinks Leclerc is laying the foundations for when Hamilton arrives next year. He's just improving and improving and improving so that, you know, it's his team that Hamilton's coming into. And I think he's on a roll. I think he's on a roll. He's driving beautiful. I mean, that race at Monza was the most beautiful race driven by Charles Leclerc. Inch perfect. He goes well at Baku, if we forget about 2019 when he crashed in qualifying. But apart from that, it's a track he's brilliant at. I think the Ferrari's going well. So I'm going to put Leclerc in one. And I think you're right. I think Red Bull are going to come back stronger. I'm going to put Verstappen in there. And then I'm going to put Norris in third. You were laughing, by the way, when I said about Leclerc preparing for Ferrari for when Hamilton arrives.
Yeah, no, I just, I mean, it's just interesting how differently we think, you know. I mean, you think, I think that Charles is not, has never thought about it, you know. I don't think he's thinking about Lewis arriving or not. He's just thinking of making sure he gets everything out of that Ferrari. He doesn't really care if when Lewis is coming or when or what, or, you know. But anyway, that's it's just an interesting point of view. You think that he's laying the foundation from the future, and I think he's just racing for his own sake for the next race.
Do you think he's not even, Lewis arriving isn't registering with Charles Leclerc?
Oh yeah, yeah, no, no. I don't get me wrong. I'm pretty sure that for any driver to have Lewis next to him, if you really believe you are as good or better, it's fantastic, you know, and I think Charles really does. All I'm saying is that at this moment in time, he's not even considering that Lewis is coming, because there's so many races in front. He has a car that has improved so much lately. You know, when you think that, wow, I mean, this car can give me more race wins this season, you're just only thinking on that, not really on the what will it be when Lewis arrives, you know? That's all I'm saying. It's just that it's just way, way far away.
This probably isn't going to come as much of a surprise, but since the return of Formula One after the summer break, our F1 fantasy team, F1 Nation Racing, has performed very disappointingly. We've scored just 283 points in total from Zandvoort and Monza, and that's dropped us down to P94,623 in the F1 Nation World Championship. Porsche F1 was P3 in the standings before the Dutch Grand Prix, and they are now 54 points clear at the top, thanks to an impressive run of form. We've currently got Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri, Max Verstappen, Nico Hülkenberg and Daniel Ricciardo in our team, with Haas and Williams as our constructors. I'm very tempted to bring Charles Leclerc in because I do fancy him to win again in Baku. Pedro and I both think Max will be back on the podium, but looking more long-term, we expect McLaren to be competitive everywhere, and Ferrari did win in Singapore last year. That's the next race after Azerbaijan, so we're going to take Max out of our team to free up some funds for Leclerc. Last week's guest on F1 Beyond the Grid was Yuki Tsunoda. He scored a point in Baku last year and is driving even better in 2024, so let's bring him in for Hülkenberg. And seeing as we've got Pedro back on the show, let's put our faith in Fernando Alonso to get back in the points. He replaces Ricciardo, so that's a lineup of Leclerc, Norris, Piastri, Alonso, and Tsunoda. F1 Fantasy is free to play, and you can join our league at any time. Just go to fantasy.formula1.com or the official F1 app and search for F1 Nation World Championship 2024 to compete against us and other listeners. And remember, you have until the start of qualifying for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix to make changes to your team. Good luck. Well, Pedro, I'll see you soon, my friend.
See you very soon. See you in Singapore. I'm not traveling to Baku, but I'll be in Singapore. So all the best, amigo.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you there. For all the timings for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix weekend, go to f1.com or the official F1 app. You can see when each session is where you are. And if you live somewhere F1 TV is available, you'll be able to watch the whole weekend live. Speaking of which, this week's guest on F1 Beyond the Grid is F1 TV commentator and former Renault driver Jolyon Palmer. That's available from Wednesday on your podcast app and the official F1 YouTube channel. And F1 Nation's very own Damon Hill is on the latest episode of F1 Explains, answering your questions about becoming a Formula One world champion. Search for F1 Explains to listen to that. Meantime, we'll be back next Monday from the Baku paddock with our review of the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Thanks for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.
. 2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper. Distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.